Welcome to the Fitness Canner Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Feigl. Every week, I'll be bringing you the truth about exercise by interviewing fitness professionals, exercise science professors and researchers, as well as fitness industry entrepreneurs and leaders. Hopefully, you take this info and apply it to have a better, healthier, and happier lifestyle. Thanks, and enjoy the show.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Fitness Canner Podcast. Per usual, I am your host, Eric Feigl. You haven't got rid of me yet. I am joined today by Dr. Jeff Willardson. He is a professor at my alma mater, Eastern Illinois University. And I wanted to have him on for two reasons today. Number one is purely selfish, just because it's going to bring back some nostalgia for me to talk about Eastern Illinois and Charleston and we kind of talked a little bit beforehand about all the professors that are still there and all the changes that have been made. So that'll be fun for me. And a second reason is I think it's important that people know just what goes into strength training in general and the teaching of becoming a personal trainer, what people go through to become a personal trainer. And not that Dr. Willardson directly deals with personal trainers per se, because the people that go through these courses may or may not go into the same field. So we'll get to learn about that also. So right now, Dr. Willardson has been teaching at Eastern Illinois since 2005. Some of his classes include the Advanced Biomechanics of Resistance Training, Biomechanics of Human Motion, Principles of Exercise Phys, just to name a few. He's been published in the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research and the Journal of Sports Medicine and Physical Fitness. So definitely a great guy to pick his brain, and I'm looking forward to it. So Dr. Willardson, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, you're welcome. Good to be here.
Awesome. So we talked a little bit beforehand about the changes of what's going on at Eastern Illinois and the different moves people have made. What got you into more than the teaching side, exercise science specifically?
Well, I competed in sports as a youth and through high school, and found that I was really more interested in the process of training than in the actual competition. So I would like to track my exercises and similar to what a personal trainer would do in prescribing a program, and I just really found that I enjoyed doing that and writing things down and then trying to exceed what my best marks were, and that kind of led into college where I found that you could actually major in exercise science and study all of this stuff, and figured out that the best way that I could teach and support a family was through getting a doctorate degree. And so I did a bachelor's and master's degree at Utah State University, and then on to a doctorate at Arizona State. And then my first job was here at Eastern Illinois University, and I've been here for 11 years.
That's awesome. I think for Eastern Illinois, it's not a massive school. As when I was there, I think we had, 10 to what, maybe 12,000 students. I'm not sure if there's more or less than that now, but the exercise science program specifically, and I'm sure this goes with every major, you form a very tight bond, and especially once you get into your junior, your senior year, and if you move on to grad school, it's even closer because there's less people. Do you find that the people in exercise science, maybe, in my view, everybody has a very close knit in exercise science because it's such a specific thing that you're getting involved in. Almost everyone comes from like an athletic background. Everybody likes to weight train or exercise. And so there's an unique and unusual camaraderie, I feel like, in the exercise science field. Would you agree? Do you observe that too?
Yeah, you know, especially nowadays with the popular media where fitness has become very trendy, and with young people in college, especially lifting weights and improving your physique is tremendously popular, and I find that students really enjoy learning about that, especially more of the applied principles, looking at research and learning that you can actually use it to make your workouts more effective.
Right.
And I enjoy doing studies here that involve students. I think it enriches their educational experience, and they learn things about how to design different research protocols to answer a certain question, and seeing the process from start to finish. You really develop a good relationship with students, and then you see them go on and have success in their field, and it's nice when you get a note every once in a while just expressing appreciation and that they remember your class and they're using that material now as part of their job. That's really satisfying.
Yeah, I bet it is. I mean, I'm sure that I don't have to tell you this, but, you know, as an instructor, I mean, how many kids do you see that they really, you make an impact on everybody, so hopefully you get a little bit of reward when somebody says, hey, thanks for, you know, X, Y, Z, especially if they're having success in that field still. What do you think the importance of education is when it comes to someone who's going to start executing strength training programs? Where does that fall into? Because nowadays, as you know, it's easy for literally anyone to go out and say they're a personal trainer just by getting, you know, a certificate online and they like to exercise. So they're like, oh, now I'm a personal trainer, or now I'm a, you know, you name it, whatever it is. I'm not saying that there are people out there that have certifications and aren't awesome strength coaches, because there are plenty of them. I work with a few. But they take the time to research, they take the time to learn, and they know that it's bigger than just them. You know, it's about helping people's lives. So, circling back, where do you see the importance of education and strength training?
Well, you know, there's a debate about, you know, the importance of education versus experience, and I think it really depends on what your specific job is. I think both are important. The personal training industry is pretty loosely regulated in terms of who can be titled as a personal trainer. The certifications out there will vary in the amount of rigor and knowledge required to achieve a particular certification. I think it depends on how much you put into your education as well, because there are some classes in a university environment that have very little practical application to what goes on in the real world. So I think a lot depends on the quality of instructor too. When you're selecting an exercise science program, you want to make sure that you have instructors at this particular school that understand that the importance of the practical material. How can you take the material that's in the book and use it in the real world? That's what I try to do in my classes is take the material from the text and teach students why it's important. You know, anybody can teach how to do a lat pull down or how to do a bench press or how to do any other functional type movement. It's not knowing how to do the movement that's as important as knowing when and why. So that's what the education is for, is to learn when to program a movement and why to do the movement, more so than just how to do the movement. So I think both education and experience are both important, but education is really what you put into it.
Right. Yeah, you can have all of the knowledge in the world, but if you don't know how to execute that knowledge, then it's not necessarily 100% waste, but I mean, you have to understand who you're talking to, what their abilities are, and what you're trying to accomplish as well as what they're trying to accomplish. And to have an instructor that can actually relay that information is, I think, invaluable. You can't put a price tag on that.
Yeah, biomechanics and exercise physiology. We'll talk about the foundational material and things, and then I'll just ask an open question. So why is this important, or why should you care about this material? And then I'll give the practical application next. So we go from the basic to the applied material.
Yeah. Well, what I think is really unique about the exercise science field is that once a person really dives into it, they can kind of start to form their own philosophies built around what they've learned. You know, there's not like a, there are some things, obviously that's why the research is done, or how you should handle someone with, some kind of a spinal issue or rheumatoid arthritis or cancer or what have you. But you get to develop how you use all of the techniques and the principles, because everybody, for the most part, is going to move the same way, barring injuries and things like that. But everybody, we all know that, we all have X amount of bones, and we all have, this is how a certain squat should be performed and things like that. So you get to kind of mold the application into the education.
Yeah, I agree. I've been able to get funding to where I've been able to order some different pieces of equipment, Vertimax and the Just Jump mat and a Vertec and a Tendo unit and different things where we can take information from class and then go into the rec center and use that with equipment so they can see the principal in action.
Right.
That's where students make that connection. Power is equal to force times velocity, and when they can actually see what it means, in doing a clean or squat, that's when students are engaged the most.
Right. Yeah. Learning and seeing the technique versus just seeing the principle on paper is so huge, and that translates directly to working with a client too. Because especially with someone who's brand new on my end, someone walks in and they'll ask me, "So, what kind of training do you do?" And I'll explain strength principles, and they kind of look at me with this look like, what are you talking about?" I'm like, "Well, let's walk through this together. Let's go through a short workout, and we can explain it. And then once you actually put that into practice, and you show them everything that what I personally think a solid exercise program should look like, then it starts to click, and then it's like, oh wow, okay, I see the benefit in the background of what you were saying. Your specific background is specifically strength training. So what I really wanted to dive into, and I know I've beat this over everybody's head, I'm probably going to lose 5 out of 10 subscribers for asking this. But who needs strength training and why? And who do you work with specifically?
Well, I think strength training is for everyone. Back in the 1970s, when a lot of the research was starting to be carried out in the field, a lot of it was more geared towards endurance-oriented training, strength training, which is kind of set aside. But gradually over the years, we've come to the conclusion how important strength training can be, especially to maintain functionality through the lifespan. It's been shown that people that are stronger live longer, independent of aerobic fitness. So, especially with the loss of muscle mass and especially the loss of, you know, those type 2 muscle fibers with age, you know, we can preserve those fibers with heavy strength training. You have to consider the limits of the individual as well. Some people, due to joint or cardiovascular problems, will have to alter the way that they lift weights, but I think everybody can benefit from your elite athlete to, you know, people that are 80 or 90 years old. It's always something that everybody can do, and there's an infinite variety of ways that you can lift weights, and so it's just the possibilities are pretty well endless in addressing a person's goals.
Yeah, I think what you said in there, you hit on the lifting heavy weights. And again, you know, barring injury or physical limitations, I think that is, it's such a huge, it takes such a demand on the body to change. The body builds up quite a resistance, especially to exercise, and that's what makes it, I think, what makes it so interesting, because you see the progression in someone who, let's say, used to do a 30-pound, you know, dumbbell bent over row, and all of a sudden, you know, weeks or months down the road, they're doing 40, maybe 45 pounds, 50-pound dumbbells and rows in the same repetition range, and you see that progression over time, and you see how at one time that 30 pounds was very challenging, and now that 50 pounds is very challenging, but they're able to accomplish it. And that word heavy can be very daunting to people, you know, especially women who don't want to, quote-unquote, look big or get big. And, again, that goes back to the science where you start talking about, well, here's why more than likely you're not going to look like Arnold when you walk out of the gym. And but I think that's really interesting, you know, that you actually brought up heavy weightlifting. I like that a lot.
Yeah, you know, there's still a lot of misconceptions about strength training, especially in the not so much in the among the younger generation, but maybe the middle or older generation, in terms of, you know, well, I thought only football players lifted weights, and
right,
just understanding that to maintain muscle and maintain vitality and functionality, this is a important part of a healthy lifestyle.
Right. Yeah, overall. And it's funny that you bring that football player, because in some of my earlier podcasts, I talked to people who were around when they first started to introduce strength training to football players, and some of the coaches were so opposed to it. You know, no, we're not going to do that. It's going to injure our players. And now it's so prevalent in, and we understand the importance of especially weight training with athletes, especially the ones who are taking such a pounding, like football players, hockey players, you know, things like that. And it's kind of funny how it progresses like that. You know, it's like, nope, we're not going to do it. Yes, we have to do it. And some people still think that the only people who should do it are those kind of athletes.
Yeah, you know, it's fun to see things evolve over time.
Yeah.
My office here overlooks the EIU Recreation Center, and I can see several older people right now lifting weights. So Eastern has a really good adult fitness program that promotes that. So
yeah,
they have training and people available to give good supervision.
Right, absolutely. To go along with who needs strength training, what are your recommendations? What do you usually go with in terms of frequency, duration, and maybe even intensity?
Well, it depends on the client. This morning I was working with a 75-year-old man who's had shoulder surgery to repair a torn rotator cuff. and it's been several months since the surgery. But we try to stick with things that don't produce pain, obviously. But I like to employ a lot of different modalities. I like to focus a lot on core stability. So being able to maintain static tension in the core muscles while incorporating hip and shoulder movements around a stable core. So, for example, I'll have them do exercises in a prone position, a supine position, a side lying position, and just trying to have them incorporate maintaining, you know, the center of their body statically tensed, and then incorporating different actions of the hip and shoulder joints around that. Also incorporating a lot of elastic type resistance. Sometimes I found that works really well for people with limited function that might be a little bit intimidated by free weights. Elastic bands work really well to train the hip muscles and also the shoulder muscles.
Yeah, and the resistive bands I find work, especially with someone who's never strength trained before. Machines, number one, are fantastic. But if a person doesn't have a machine to use, resistance bands, it lets you really get a sense of how to control your muscles during, any kind of movement. Chest press, seated row, pull down, squat. You know, you could do the whole body with a resistance band. But I definitely like resistance bands for beginners in particular. But there's nothing wrong with using a resistance band for intermediate and advanced also. So would you take someone that you're working with, would you take him through, would you recommend someone go, 2-3 days a week for 30 minutes? Or do you have, obviously based off, let's say you have a healthy individual walk in the room. What would you recommend for that person to do?
For your recreationally active person?
Yeah.
I would recommend a total body program, probably 3 days a week. Keeping the prescription really simple, some type of squat, and there's lots of different variations of squat, combined with some type of pull, upper extremity pull, either a vertical pull or a horizontal pull, or both, combined with a press, either a vertical press or a horizontal press. So you're incorporating the fundamental movement patterns of squatting, so raising and lowering your center of gravity in some way, flexion and extension of the hips and knee joints, and then you've got some type of pulling type action for the upper extremities, and you can incorporate different angles and postures on that, and then some type of pressing type action, different angles and postures on that as well, and then probably added on to that, some type of resisted torso rotation. So not that you're dynamically rotating your torso, but that you're in a position where you're resisting torso rotation. So something like a polyp press with a cable. So that makes it really simple. So 3 days a week, taking each of those days, total body workout, and then each of those days, some type of squat, some type of press, some type of pull, and then something specifically for the core. So it makes it really simple.
Right. It is simple. It's effective. You're hitting the major muscle groups. You're getting a long-term calorie burn, building muscle. And depending on how short or long your rest breaks are, you get a good cardiovascular workout with that, too.
Like that probably take 30 minutes to do 2-3 sets of each one, and you're in and you're out, and you've got every muscle in your body worked, and you're ready to go.
Yep, absolutely. I like the fact, going, what I've been trying to do lately, actually, I try to mix up workouts, obviously, often, but I've been doing, what I used to do is I was so strict with doing like two lower body movements, two upper body movements, and then I would kind of rotate back and forth. And then I would do it in a cycle. So for instance, I would do like a single joint movement. I would do like a knee extension and then a leg press. And then I would go to a, let's say incline chest press and then a wide grip lat pull down or a close grip lat pull down. And then I would pick another four exercises that were different, but I'd do it in a similar fashion. So now what I've been trying to do, and just for variation, and you kind of hit on that, I'll do a lower body pressing movement, and I'll go right to an upper body pulling movement, and then back down to a pressing or a pulling movement, hamstring curl, or a single leg extension or something like that, and then back up to a press to match my pull that I did before. And I'll kind of bounce back and forth until I complete, four to eight exercises like that, and then I'll move on about two sets.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, there's going from a foundational program, there's always things you can do, agonist,
yep,
antagonist, supersets, and, drop,
yep,
sets. There's always those more advanced techniques. If you have the motivation and time to incorporate those are good,
right,
for really maxing out your potential.
Right. Yeah, and the more advanced client you have, the more, let's go ahead and say, the more fun you can have.
It's fun to work with somebody that has no functional limitations, and you can just throw anything at them and they're willing to try it. And
right.
It's fun to see, to challenge them.
And it's also, I think, really fun to and I'm sure you can agree, when you see someone that maybe does have some limitations, and all of a sudden you notice that they're changing.
Yes. They mention their clothes are fitting differently. And
right.
They may not be losing a lot of weight per se, but their composition of their body is changing, so that the density of their body is changing to where, their clothes are a lot looser than they used to be.
Yep.
So.
Or their shoulder isn't hurting as much, or, they're able to do something as simple as, like, put a jacket on without any pain, or,
yeah,
sit up, or those things get me super excited. And that's like the nerd coming out in me. But when a person's daily life is affected by strength training, that's the main thing. That's the real benefit, right?
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
I love that. So I wanted to like to keep them kind of short, the workouts also. I like to keep that abbreviated, high intensity. And that high intensity is very loose depending on who you're working with. But that 30 to 45 minute range that you mentioned, I can't recommend that anymore, because I think some people get that idea of, I have to be in the gym for an hour to an hour and a half, when in reality it's not necessarily your length of workout, but your intensity of workout. And again,
it's funny, I think the quality over the quantity, and the high intensity interval training, and just the exertion part of working out has really become kind of trendy and popular lately. It's all of a sudden, it's kind of funny that scientists are realizing that, working hard for a short period of time can give you the same amount of benefit as working at lower intensity for a longer period of time, and that applies to strength as well as cardiovascular endurance. So, it's something that anecdotally we knew for lots of years, that working hard is an important part of working out and really exerting yourself and giving 100%. And now science is just kind of catching up to that. And oh my goodness, it works. You don't need to spend all this time. If you're truly working hard, you can get the same benefits. So.
Yeah, and here comes another geek moment, but that truly speaks to the ability of the body to adapt to nearly any situation. It can achieve the same results in so many different ways. And I think that's what is so, it's so incredible, because what some people can do versus what other people can't, you know, you can find a different way to achieve the same goal. And that just, that blows my mind sometimes to think about how intricate and detailed the body is, yet it can do so much.
Yeah, you know, I think just that overload principle, and the overload principle can be applied in a lot of different ways. It's not always about putting more weight on the bar. It can
right.
be about changing the mechanics of the exercise to create more muscle activation, or create a greater challenge in balance, or any number of things can make an exercise more challenging, more so than just lifting more weight. And not sometimes people can't put heavy weights on the bar, and so you have to think of other ways to create an overload and to get their bodies to adapt to the next level.
Right. Right, yeah, good point. Good point. Yeah, so and that's really speaks volumes to the keeping all the exercise, you know, varying the exercises too. I think that's just another way to achieve that. That's a good point. As we wrap things up here, I wanted to kind of let you plug yourself a little bit for those who want to get more understanding of what you do and how important the work is that you're doing. What's your current projects look like right now? What are you working on?
Well, lots of different things. I collaborate a lot with people down in Brazil. They have a lot of good ideas and resources to do strength training type research. So recently we compared three different variations of the leg press exercise, and a very practical type of study. If you've ever had clients hold a physio ball between their legs as they're doing a leg press, to create greater activation of the hip adductors.
Right.
Well, one thing we found is that that also creates greater activation of the vastus medialis.
Okay.
And so that can really lessen the risk for patellofemoral pain syndrome, sometimes called chondromalacia or runner's knee, where the vastus lateralis becomes very dominant and pulls laterally on the patella without any counterpull from the vastus medialis. And so we found that altering a traditional leg press by simply putting a physio ball between the knees as they're doing the pressing action creates greater activation of the vastus medialis and tends to correct that imbalance between the vasti muscles. So the message is, you know, that it's a very there's ways you can alter exercises to make it more effective.
Yeah, and that's good to know. I train a lot of runners too. And thankfully, none that I have, you know, major knee problems, which is great, but that's something I can incorporate now to have, you know, to hopefully prevent that. Are you going along, this really wasn't something I was going to bring up, but since you mentioned it, when you line somebody up for a leg press, how do you feel about foot angle? Are you in favor of variation, or just what's comfortable for the individual, as long as like the knee's tracking over the toe, or do you have any input on that at all?
There's a lot of different leg press models, as you know. The leg press, it's interesting. There can be a lot of compressive forces on the low back with a leg press. You have to be really careful. I would say comfort is probably the main thing, making sure that that they're at an adjustment where they can reach a 90 degree hip and knee angle at the bottom of the movement. Depending on someone with ACL, a previous history of ACL injuries, they're probably going to have very dominant quadriceps. in which case, you know, you may want to incorporate different techniques such as a single leg press, which would tend to emphasize more the hip right. muscle, the stabilizing function of the hip. A lot of leg press models are very dominant in the way that they activate the quadriceps over the hamstrings, which would tend to exacerbate the problem. And someone with previous history of ACL issues, usually they're very dominant in the quadriceps anyway, so you don't want to further that problem. So you'd want to focus more on the hips, which would be a single leg press or placing your feet higher on the platform to focus more on hip extensors versus knee extensors.
Wow, okay. So really that the comfort is the majority of it, and that's a good point considering, you know, just like you said, the strain that might be placed on the lower back. For people who don't quite get that 90-degree bend, what I started doing is I kind of open up their hips a little bit by rotating their toes outward a little bit, and I find that they get a little closer to where that 90-degree should be. I feel like they get a little more extension out of it, and really, I mean, obviously you're activating just a little bit more of your abductors. You open your hip up a little bit more, but
right.
Anyway, that was just a side note. Just kind of found that interesting.
Yeah, sure. There's always things to do to break with just the traditional method, and I think it's good to keep the body the best way to keep the body adapting is to change things on a regular basis, so you don't get too comfortable doing things one way.
Right. Right. Yeah, and especially the more understanding you have of, you know, just what we were talking about earlier, the physiology of the body and how it operates and how it works. And so this is just a little side note for myself. For people out there who are just basic exercisers, just, you know, it wouldn't hurt just to open up a book and, you know, like a basic exercise phys book to get new ideas for things instead of, you know, looking at men's health or something like that. But I don't want to get on a soapbox because I seem to do that a lot, I've been told. So I'll step down. But hey, Dr. Willardson, I appreciate the time that you took to talk to us today, and I know that everybody's going to take away some more information on how the body works and how important strength training is. So from a panther to a panther, I appreciate the time that you put in. So have a great rest of your day, and I'll be sure to let you know when this posts.
Oh, thank you, Eric. I enjoyed it. Take care now.
I want to give a quick shout-out to a Fitness Candor podcast contributor, Lauren from Cincinnati. Her contribution and support will help me create better content to share. If you're interested in becoming a contributor, please visit fitnesscandorpodcast.podbean.com. Thanks again, Lauren. Don't forget to check out Fitness Candor on Facebook and Twitter. Leave your thoughts about the show and let me know what else you guys are interested in hearing. Thanks, and I'll talk to you next time.